Brian Curtis.
I'm Wendy Ring, and welcome to Cool Solutions. Back in 2016, my husband Mike and I went to Des Moines to campaign for Bernie Sanders in the Iowa primary. His campaign headquarters had this list of people who'd voted Democratic in previous elections, and they put us to work calling and knocking on doors. But during primary season, seasoned Iowans don't answer the phone. And with temperatures in the teens, no one wanted to stand in their open doorway talking politics either. It felt like a waste of time. And we knew that for Bernie to win, he needed new voters. So we went rogue. We needed to catch people somewhere out of the weather when they weren't rushing by. So we started what we called potty politics, a poster blitz on bathroom stalls on campuses and in bars. The posters said, "Are you pissed that billionaires keep getting richer while nearly half of U.S. workers earn less than a living wage? Are you tired of corporate politicians who don't give a crap about 99% of the people in their districts? Are you amazed that they even let me get on the radio?" That wasn't on the sign. Now, I can't say they all saw our posters, but the caucuses in Des Moines overflowed with new voters. I can say that getting people who don't usually vote to vote is key to winning this election in November. Over the next 3 months, an army of volunteers is working to reach out to the estimated 10 million registered voters who care about climate change but rarely cast their ballots. And thanks to the wonders of modern technology, they can do it without braving snowy streets and public restrooms. One of the people who made that possible is Nathaniel Stinnett.
So many people who care deeply about climate and the environment live with an almost overwhelming amount of frustration on a daily basis. Oftentimes, people feel paralyzed, like there's not much that they can do. And people also feel the same way about politics sometimes.
For a long time, Nathaniel himself was in that category, and not from lack of effort. He tried to make a change from within the system by running and advising political campaigns, but even when his candidates won, there was little progress.
I always felt I had to live with my frustration.
Then he had an epiphany. The pieces of the political puzzle fell into place, and he saw what he needed to do.
The absolute building block of all modern campaigns and even policymaking is this. Who you vote for is secret, but whether you vote or not, that's public record. And so the first thing any politician does is they look at public voter files to see who is likely to show up in the election they care about. And surprise, surprise, those are the people who politicians care about. They care about the voters, not the non-voters. Just like Starbucks doesn't care about you if you don't drink coffee. Just like Ford Motor Company doesn't care about you if you can't drive. Well, similarly, politicians only care about what voters think, and they literally know who those people are by name and street address.
And those are the people they ask when they're titrating their enthusiasm for things like climate action.
You will see polls of all American adults or all registered voters, but they're never done by campaigns or policymakers because they know better. Those polls are usually done by media outlets. If you're an actual politician, you only poll the people who have a history of voting in the election you care about. Campaigns don't reveal those polls. They're what's called internal polls. But they are being done all the time. And that is what drives all policymaking, the opinions of voters, not non-voters.
Those polls never show climate as a top concern. And here's the realization that galvanized Nathaniel.
The reason isn't because too few Americans care about those issues. There are tens of millions of people who care about climate and the environment in the United States. But they are disproportionately not voting.
Environmentalists don't vote? Yeah, Nathaniel's been counting.
In the 2014 midterms, 44% of registered voters voted. But only 21% of environmentalists who are registered showed up. 15.78 million environmentalists stayed home. Then in the 2016 presidential, 69% of registered voters voted, but only 50% of environmentalists did. 10.1 million environmentalists stayed home. In the 2018 midterms, it was a little bit better news. 57% of registered voters voted, and 53% of environmentalists did. So we're getting better, but we're still not even hitting average. We're still not voting as often as the rest of America does. If we just think about the 2016 presidential election, 139 million people voted. And when you think of a big denominator like that, it makes your one vote seem small. But the truth is, the election was only decided by 77,000 votes in three states. And so a little bit of growth in voter turnout here or there can have an enormous impact.
But again, voting isn't just about electing the right politicians.
Because we know what happens to campaign promises.
It's about joining that group of citizens who get polled.
Even if you know up and down the ballot who is going to win and who is going to lose where you live, even if you write your dog's name in on the ballot, it is still crucially important to show up and vote, because that's how you become a first-class citizen. That small group of voters is the only group of Americans that politicians pay attention to. When I realized, hey, wait a second, maybe this thing that we're struggling with politically is a lot easier than we make it out to be. Maybe it's not that we need to persuade more people to think like us. Instead, it's just that we need to get more of us to the polls. Well, that was really exciting, because we live in a moment in time when it's increasingly hard to convince anybody of anything. You just can't change the mind of a climate denier. It's damn near impossible. But if it turns out there are 20 million non-voting environmentalists out there and we just need to nudge them and get them to the polls, well, that's a lot easier to do.
So he gave up his law practice and political campaigning to start the Environmental Voter Project.
But before you can turn non-voting environmentalists into voting environmentalists, first you have to find them.
And by them, we don't mean people who care about climate but put it near the bottom of the list.
The way you get political change is not by getting lots of people to prefer your cause. Instead, it's to get lots of people to prioritize your cause. And that's a really important difference. Polls will often tell you 60, 65, 70% of Americans would prefer government action on climate change. Well, yeah, but 70% of Americans prefer apples to oranges. That doesn't mean it's going to be like the hot political issue in the presidential election. What we need is a big, big block of voters who list climate as their top priority. That is where groups like the NRA get their power. Large, large majorities of Americans support a whole host of gun control measures. But gun rights activists end up wielding just as much or more political power, not because there are more of them, there are actually less of them, but because they show up whenever there's an election. And that's the hidden power that's in the environmental movement that, to be honest, our opponents don't have. There is not some block of environment haters out there that's ruining everything. It's just that we're not showing up enough to get our own way.
So the mission of the Environmental Voter Project is to find the people with climate and the environment at the top of their list and voting near the bottom, and change that.
We know how to find the non-voters. That's public information.
To find the environmentalists, the project taps into that trail of personal data we leave behind with practically everything we do. Our Google searches, social media, purchases, donations, event tickets, you name it.
All that data gets fed into algorithms, which flag combinations of characteristics, which go along with caring about environmental issues.
Here's a real example. If you're a Catholic African-American male forestry worker who watches basketball and has an email address at AOL.com, climate change is likely to be one of your top political issues.
Really?
With an accuracy of nearly 90%. And this hauls in a larger and more diverse segment of the electorate than the mailing list of, say, the Sierra Club, whose membership is largely white and gray-haired.
Because the groups most likely to have climate action as a top priority are young people and people of color.
So the Environmental Voter Project takes that list of presumptive environmentalists, cross-references it with a list of registered but infrequent voters, and that's who they reach out to.
We contact an average of about 25,000 non-voting environmentalists every day.
And what they say might surprise you.
We're this weird environmental nonprofit that almost never talks about the environment, because it turns out that's actually not a very impactful way to get someone to vote.
Nathaniel's group designs treatments for political apathy the same way we test drugs for cancer and diabetes, with randomized controlled trials.
Let's say in the state of Florida, we identify a million environmentalists who are unlikely to vote. Before we talk to a single one, we randomly remove about 20%, about 200,000 of them, and set them aside in a control group. And we never talk to those people. Then the remaining 800,000, those are the people our volunteers text and call and canvass. And then the election happens. A few months after the election, we can actually look up how many people voted in our treatment group, the people we were talking to, versus our control group, and measure how much we were solely responsible for increasing turnout. And we are getting amazing results at this.
Here's one of their most effective treatments.
We'll send them a text message and we'll say, you've got an election coming up on November 3rd. Do you intend to vote?
Now, this message is going to someone who, by definition, rarely votes, but no one wants to admit that.
Most people will say, yeah, sure, I intend to vote. And that is like gold for the following reason. One of the strongest societal norms we have is that most people want to be thought of as honest and trustworthy people. And so if you get someone to promise to take an action, that allows you to go back to them right before Election Day and say, back in September, you signed a promise to vote, and the election's on Tuesday, and so that's going to be your opportunity to follow through on your promise. Well, now, we've totally changed the conversation, right? Instead of me trying to rationally convince you of the value of your one vote, well, now the act of voting is pretty much going to decide whether you're honest or dishonest. That is enormously powerful. In the 2018 midterm elections, in the 6 states in which we were active, we were solely responsible for increasing turnout 2.7 percentage points over our control group.
In the get out the vote world, a 1% increase is big success. So that's pretty good.
It is. Yeah. Ask Hillary Clinton how big a deal 2.7 is. I mean, that's a lot in this business. It was good enough for adding 59,000 brand new environmental voters to the electorate.
The Environmental Voter Project isn't just about this presidential election. They're cultivating lifelong civic engagement at all levels of government.
When we talk to people for a presidential election, well, you can bet that 3 months later, we're going to be getting that person a vote in their city council race. We mobilized people for 613 different local and state elections just in 2019.
Even when you don't know the candidates running for school board or city council, Nathaniel says we should not underestimate the importance of voting in local elections.
Turnout is so low in local elections that a small number of people can always have an outsized impact. The people who have control over how buildings are built and where you can park have an enormous capacity to really change the future of the planet.
With so many people voting from home, this is going to be a long, drawn-out election.
So the project does a lot more than send out reminders before November 3rd. They've got ballot-chasing software that follows mail-in ballots step by step.
He will contact people before they're going to get the ballot and will say, hey, Josephine in Boise, Idaho, your ballot will be arriving in 2 days. Make sure you look out for it. And then we'll contact him a few days later and say, just want to make sure you got your ballot. And then we'll contact him a few weeks later and say, notice you haven't returned your ballot yet. We'll really bird dog them because it is obviously a crucially important election.
How do people respond to that kind of pestering? I think you may have just motivated a bunch of listeners to vote to avoid ending up on your call list.
Oftentimes they're grateful. Sometimes, yeah, I mean, most people don't like someone calling them at home, but usually they are much more receptive to our calls and our texts than to campaign calls and texts. We're not trying to get them to tell us who they're going to vote for. We're not trying to convince them to change their mind and support a different person. We're just trying to help them become better voters, which most people want to be.
Nathaniel's actually the CEO and admits he's not the one making the calls.
With only 4 staff members, it's the Environmental Voter Project's army of volunteers who does the talking to those millions of voters. So for a firsthand look at what that's like and how people really react, we asked Jeff Jocelyn, an Environmental Voter Project volunteer in Georgia.
I'm an airline pilot, so working for the environment's a bit of a penance for me for putting carbon dioxide into the atmosphere.
Well, I guess you've got time to volunteer right now.
Yes, I have quite a bit of free time right now.
Jeff started volunteering back in 2016 when collecting those promises to vote was done door to door.
I'm probably like everybody else. I don't like answering my own door when there's somebody at the door. The first couple of times I was nervous about it. Once people saw that I wasn't selling them a product or trying to push them into doing something, they were much more receptive. They would see me as somebody who could be helpful, really.
I'd feel a lot better knocking on doors in Georgia knowing that they belong to environmentalists.
I think that gives you some confidence. You know, it's not that you occasionally don't get a surprise and the person you're expecting isn't on the end of the phone or at the door, but generally speaking, you know that you're reaching out to somebody that has an interest in the environment. It's like we're helping somebody that cares about something but hasn't been expressing it consistently in their vote.
This year, there's no door knocking or people gathering physically to make phone calls. Jeff is a group leader for Citizens Climate Lobby, and he pulled together calling parties over Zoom.
The first time we did it was maybe 6 or 8 of us. We've got some brief training, maybe 30 minutes or so. And then we all got on the phone right away and started making calls. They have a script you use, and it's really pretty easy.
Do you tell people you're calling them because they're infrequent voters?
No, we don't actually mention that we know that they don't. I don't want to offend anyone. I just want them to vote.
This round of phone calls was in the lead up to the Georgia primary.
This year in Georgia, we had been all mailed applications for absentee ballots. So what we were doing was telling people that they got one, which they may have missed. They may have thrown it out as junk mail, or they may have set it aside. We asked them if they got it, encouraged them to fill it out and send it in, or told them how to get a new one if they needed a new one.
And how'd it go?
Generally speaking, fairly smoothly. You know, we'll have people that hang up on us, but we have a brief but reasonably good conversation with most of the people that we connect with. What was really kind of fun was in a fair amount of cases, the environmental voter we were calling may have been a young person and their parents might answer and they weren't there. And so when we asked if they'd take a message, we would tell them why we were calling and they were interested as well.
Any particularly memorable interactions?
We talk afterwards just to kind of share stories and experiences. And a couple of us have actually ended up having conversations with somebody that we think turned out to be a computer-generated person and not really a person at all. And the conversation went on for about 5 or 6 minutes before they figured that out. I felt really pretty joyful about the whole experience. We ended up getting maybe 30 people to make calls, and I personally felt like I connected and know that there were people that voted because of my call. There was a bigger effort in the election because I was making some phone calls. That feels really good.
I'm Wendy Ring, and you are listening to Cool Solutions, Climate Action from the Bottom Up. My co-host Brian Curtis and I have been talking with Nathaniel Stinnett and Jeff Jocelyn of the Environmental Voter Project about getting millions of non-voting environmentalists to vote. Now, calling and texting strangers isn't everyone's cup of tea. That's why Scott Forman founded Vote Forward with its low-pressure, low-tech approach to getting out the vote.
Part of the reason I started this thing is that as a kind of incorrigible introvert, I really hated calling people on the phone and knocking on their doors. I've done it. And I'll do it again in the future because I think it's important to do all the things. But it's not my favorite activity. I'm a little bit shy about talking to strangers. And the nice thing about a letter is that you have the space to really think about what you want to say. And I think for a lot of our volunteers, it can be a little bit uncomfortable to call a stranger out of the blue. And so for a certain type of person, of which I'm one, I think this mode of communication is really appealing.
Scott and Nathaniel traveled different roads to arrive at the same conclusion.
My professional background is mostly in the software world. I used to work at this company called Opower.
Opower is a company that helps utilities improve customer energy efficiency by sending people reports that compare their electricity use with their neighbors. Our powerful drive to keep up with the Joneses actually makes people cut down on power use.
I had been nursing for a while the idea that similar tactics might work for civic engagement. I designed this template for a letter that just basically encourages the recipient to vote.
He did a randomized controlled trial in Alabama, sending handwritten letters to a group of infrequent voters. And lo and behold, it worked.
We saw a 3.4 percentage point increase in turnout between the treatment group and the control group.
Isn't that a little strange for a tech guy to promote handwritten letters?
It's sort of a personality thing. I think it's just that even though I have a real affinity for the technical side of things, I like the analog world too. And I feel like sometimes the marriage of those two can be interesting. I also, to be honest, was really looking for something extremely concrete that I could do, because it's almost like an anti-anxiety measure. Like if you're feeling upset or nervous or angry about our politics, it's nice to have something that feels a little bit old-fashioned. It actually feels pretty good to do it.
And he says it's something anyone can do.
If you can pick up a pen and seal an envelope, this is really one of the most effective things that a volunteer can do to increase voter turnout, especially at this moment where a lot of the traditional tactics, knocking on doors, standing outside of supermarkets to register voters, etc., aren't really available to us.
So what is in these magic letters?
It essentially says, as a fellow American citizen, I vote in every election, and then give your reason why you vote. And then you plead with the recipient to do the same. We encourage our volunteers to be as personal as they can be in the part of the letter that is handwritten. And that includes talking about issues that they care about.
And just so you don't become a hypocrite, when you sign up to volunteer,
we'll ask you to promise that you yourself vote in every election. We think it is long-term really good for the health of our democracy to have lots of people say that out loud.
Maybe it's just me, but if I didn't vote very often and someone wrote me a letter saying they always voted, I might take that as condescending. You know, like better than thou.
In the social psychology, there's a lot of research that the idea that somebody else out there, a peer of some kind, takes this action seems to be really powerful. I'm not entirely sure that the message matters as much as the fact that somebody is taking the time to send it. It's sort of an expression of care more than anything else. And so the fact that it's from a fellow citizen who cares enough to take the time to do it and to put a stamp on the thing, that's at least my personal theory about why it's effective, more than the messaging itself.
Just getting a letter from another actual human being is bound to get someone's attention.
It is novel now. We don't get that many of these. I think that's part of why it tends to stand out in people's mailboxes, is that, you know, you flip through and you see Capital One and you see the deliberately blank envelope that's trying to fool you into opening it. I really do like the fact that we are also helping to support the Postal Service. People are buying a lot of stamps to do this thing, and that is not a small benefit at a time when the USPS is really under attack and under duress. We're helping to encourage people to frequent them and to use this amazing service that they provide, which is the ability to get a physical object into any American's home. That's really kind of a miracle. So we feel good about supporting that as well.
So where does the tech part come in?
This is where the old-timey sensibility meets the 21st century. We basically built a website that handles a lot of the volunteer coordination aspects. So what happens is volunteers come to the website and they sign up, and we ask them some basic questions to make sure that they're humans and that they have good intentions. And once they're approved, we have this software platform that allows you to choose which state you'd like to write to, and then to, as we say, adopt voters in that state. The website then generates a template of the letter, which you can download and print. And there's a little bit of fancy software engineering behind the scenes to make it possible for lots of people to do that all at once. A lot of people have been doing things like hosting letter writing parties and posting on social media about it. And we've built a grassroots movement over the course of the last couple of years to the point where we now have several tens of thousands of letters being written every day, which I still shocks me to think about, but it's really heartening to see all of that energy and enthusiasm out there.
Now Vote Forward is working with a coalition of organizations on what they call the Big Send, a massive national letter writing campaign with the goal of sending 10 million letters to infrequent voters in swing states before Election Day.
A few key partners include Indivisible, People for the American Way, the Women's March Foundation, Daily Kos, and Swing Left, and we are welcoming other partners to the coalition as we go.
As of late July, Big Send volunteers have written and stockpiled close to 3 million letters, which will all be mailed in October.
Some of them go to traditionally underrepresented communities in the electorate, young people and racial minorities, and then also, as a 501c4, we're able to do some amount of explicitly political work. And in those cases, we target voters who we think are very likely to vote for Democrats. We're generally aiming at people who have something around a 50% chance of voting in any given election. We're not delusional about the effect that we can have, but we do have pretty strong evidence that we can cause extra voters to turn out. And that does change the shape of the electorate over time.
And time is getting short, friends. We've got 9 years left to cut greenhouse gas emissions in half.
But only 3 months till November 3rd.
With the White House, the Senate, and the future in the balance, we need all hands on deck.
So whether you're an extrovert who loves to talk or an introvert who'd rather write, if you've got a few hours a week, now is the time to join one of these groups and help turn out climate voters. Do it for the planet. And do it for yourself.
You will quickly move from feeling frustrated and scared to feeling empowered and to feeling like you're truly having an impact at a crucially important moment in time. Don't have any regrets. Don't sit down on election night to watch the returns roll in and feel like you didn't do enough. Give that future version of yourself a favor and just get in the game and start volunteering. It will make you feel great.
We've got all the links to volunteer at our website, cool-solutions.org.
I'm Brian Curtis.
And I'm Wendy Ring. And you've been listening to Cool Solutions, climate action from the bottom up. Thanks to our guests,
Nathaniel Stinnett, Jeff Joslin, and Scott Foreman.
And to Scott Holmes, Trevor Garrett, Dan Leibowitz, and Melissa Anderson for our music.